And we're joined on the phone from down in the Twin Cities by Dr. Ed Schapa. Dr. Schapa is the chair of the Communication Studies Department at the University of Minnesota. He has studied and written about LGBT issues for many years. He is a visiting professor this year at the Massachusetts Institute for Technology. He studies legal debates about same-sex marriage, the political debate, and is working on a book with people from Maine, Maryland, and Washington, the three states that legalized same-sex marriage this week. Dr. Schapa, thank you so much for joining us on the Roadhouse.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
Now, last Tuesday, as most everybody knows, there were two constitutional amendment questions on the ballot here in the state of Minnesota. The one, obviously, that we're interested in this evening was an amendment to classify marriage as one man, one woman. It was defeated by a somewhat narrow margin. I believe it was 51% to 49%. What did you think was going to happen with that amendment leading up? Obviously, with all the study and people that you've talked to, where did you feel that was going prior to the election?
Well, to be perfectly honest, if you had asked me to place a wager, I would have lost money on the deal because I would have bet that the amendment was going to pass.
And what was that based on, Dr. Schapa?
Well, basically history. There have been, depending on how you count them, over 30 previous state votes, and every single one prior to Tuesday had gone the other way. And, polling in Minnesota was always indicated either that it was likely to pass or it was very, very close. And what has been documented in the past is that those surveys, if anything, tend to underestimate the level of support for a constitutional amendment of this sort. And so I just thought that the numbers were not favorable for the amendment to be defeated, and history.
Uh-huh.
And I also, I've been following the campaign from a distance, and it just seemed to me like the proponents of the constitutional amendment were more visible. But I think I may have misanalyzed that one.
Yeah, clearly. And I think it seemed to me, at least up in this part of the world, they took different tacks. There was there was a fair number of TV advertising on both sides, but I saw way more internet email communication. I think from the people who were against the amendment. One of the questions that I had, you mentioned that there were, 30 or 32, whatever the number was. States prior to this, prior to Tuesday, that had passed marriage amendments similar to the one that was here in Minnesota. How many of those were on a basis of a constitutional amendment?
Oh, I don't have that exact number for you, but I would say I think actually the majority of them, in fact, have been. Because in most states, not dissimilar to Minnesota, the legislature had already essentially banned same-sex marriage or defined marriage as between a man and a woman. And so what is typically the case in terms of public referendums is that those are usually for constitutional amendments. So I don't have the exact number, but the majority actually have been constitutional amendments.
And do you think that, it would seem to me that if the legislature has already passed a law that says that's what it is, and yet they still press forward for a constitutional amendment, I'm assuming what they're trying to do is get it in as a constitutional amendment, which makes it very difficult to change. Would that be accurate?
Yes. There's sort of two theories there. One is simply to make it more difficult, and, one of the early voices in favor of putting the amendment on the ballot was the Catholic Archbishop, and that was, he was very upfront about the rationale, is that they wanted to put it out of reach of the legislature or out of reach of the Minnesota Supreme Court if they were to change their mind. By the way, a little historical bit of trivia here, Minnesota was actually the first state to have a Supreme Court rule on same-sex marriage, and it did so all the way back in 1971.
Oh, really?
And yes, there was a case that challenged whether or not that the law defining or the practices and the laws that were defining marriage as between a man and a woman, whether or not they were constitutional. And the Minnesota Supreme Court, in a really pretty short little decision, said, well, of course this is not unconstitutional, and put out several very brief arguments about why such a law made sense that now, 40 years later, would require most of those arguments would no longer be particularly compelling. But it's very interesting because Minnesota was the first state, and then that decision itself was used as legal precedent for many years.
What was particularly interesting on Tuesday was that there, not only did Minnesota defeat the marriage amendment, but three states, Maine, Maryland, and Washington, passed laws to support same-sex marriage. And that, as we said before, absolutely reversed a trend of 30-some straight victories for states opposing same-sex marriage. What happened? I mean, it was going along just one way, and all of a sudden four states shifted. What do you think happened?
Well, there were a couple of very slow trends that have been going on for the last 20 years, and Tuesday was the proverbial tipping point in terms of those trends. One of those trends is in terms of young people. As a group, young people tend to support same-sex marriage more than older groups. In fact, there's a pretty much straight-line relationship that the older the demographic, the less support there is for same-sex marriage. And so that has been a trend. And when you have an election like you did on Tuesday, where young people across the country turned out in pretty good numbers, that's going to be a significant factor. The other trend that also has been happening very, like I said, sort of slowly but surely, is that the number of Americans who actually know someone who is gay or lesbian has steadily creeped up, has slowly increased. And there's a pretty good size pile of evidence that suggests that if you know people who are gay or lesbian, you are more likely to have not only more tolerant attitudes about homosexuality, but also about same-sex marriage in particular. So when you take those two trends and then you put the votes in blue states that are above the proverbial Bible Belt, then you have a recipe for those votes turning out differently. Because, again, as you noticed, these were not landslides. These were close.
Right.
But when you put those little factors together, and let's not forget that earlier this year, this is why this is not, the fact that they are above the Bible Belt is a significant fact, because if you look at North Carolina, they voted a few months ago, not in November, but voted, I think it was in June, very strong, over 65%, I think, voted to either change their constitution. I believe it was a constitutional amendment in North Carolina,
mm-hmm.
To forbid same-sex marriage, to define it as between a man and a woman. So it's not like, if you held state votes in every state in the union tomorrow, that they would be different.
Right.
But the right recipe, if you will, came together in those four states.
I thought it was interesting, too, and I don't know if this makes a statement or what, but at least in Minnesota, the Catholic Church, the head of the Catholic Church, came out quite strongly in favor of the amendment, and yet I have to assume that a number of the people that voted against it were, in fact, Catholic. I say that because I know several. Do you think this marks anything significant in terms of that people are not necessarily going to respond to the religious point of view on this?
I think that, again, may depend a bit on region.
Right, sure.
I think, I think we do know, again, from considerable research, that your religious beliefs are often, they play a big role in what your attitudes are again, both about homosexuality in general and specifically about same-sex marriage. And so one of the things that certainly happened in Minnesota was that the organizations who were opposing the amendment really made an effort to recruit religious leaders and to get the message across there that one can be religious, one can be devout in one's particular faith, and still, if not support, at least tolerate the idea of same-sex marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we also know that from earlier elections, I hope this doesn't offend any of your listeners, but I think that some of the Catholic Church leadership has overreached, if you will. And I'm not just talking about the Archbishop, but if you remember in the elections in 2000, 2004, there were religious leaders basically saying, you know, to some Catholic parishioners that if you don't vote for the candidate who is pro-life, then you're committing a sin. Mm-hmm. That wasn't exactly what they said, but it was something to that effect.
Mm-hmm.
And really, and I think that was an overreach. I think people felt like the church was getting too political at that point, and I think we may have seen evidence of that happening in this last election as well, because most Catholics, as I understand the demographics, most Catholics voted for Obama, and of the two candidates, of course, his position on social issues like abortion and same-sex marriage is obviously further away from the Catholic Church than Romney's was.
Right. We're visiting with Dr. Ed Schapa, who is the chair of the Communication Studies Department at the University of Minnesota and has studied and written about LGBT issues for many years. Do you think the fact that Obama obviously has come out, he may not have come out completely supporting same-sex marriage, although certainly Vice President Joe Biden has, do you think that the fact that we have a president and vice president who are pretty well stated that is going down the road is going to have any effect on what happens with this issue in terms of laws or constitutional amendments?
Well, I would answer that question yes in a couple of ways. One is just in terms of public opinion. It is significant. I'm generally skeptical of the idea of celebrity endorsements. However, there are times when an opinion leader taking a position can influence people. And I'll give you two examples. One, of course, is President Obama, because we do know in 2008 in California that the African-American vote split on voting for Obama for president, but a majority voting in favor of Proposition 8 in California, which reversed their Supreme Court decision that was allowing same-sex marriage. And so in the African-American community, I think it is significant and important to have an opinion leader with as much prestige as Obama coming out publicly in favor of same-sex marriage. From a more legal standpoint, you know, we do know that the Obama administration has already said that they will not defend DOMA, or the Defense of Marriage Act, in court.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, there have been two appellate courts so far that have struck DOMA down. And I think that we're going to continue to see that trend based on my own reading of those opinions. I would be surprised if other courts don't end up sharing that opinion.
Yeah. So the fact that Obama or Biden endorses it might work, but the fact that Taylor Swift probably wouldn't mean anything.
Except for devout, there are some devout Taylor Swift fans out there, but I would say, in general, it's kind of fun to watch, you know, to see each election cycle, the efforts of the candidates to be endorsed. But there are relatively few that there's actual evidence supporting the idea that it made a difference. Yeah. One of those, by the way, does involve Obama. When Oprah came out in favor of Obama and endorsed him right before the Iowa primaries in 2008, the available evidence suggests that did make a difference. Oprah is, she's a kingmaker.
She
and I mean
way.
that In her book club.
In the few moments that we have left, you've developed a hypothesis called parasocial contact hypothesis. Tell us what that is.
The basic theory is this. We know from what's known as a contact hypothesis that a good way to reduce prejudice is to have productive contact between minority and majority members of groups. The parasocial hypothesis extends that basically to film and television and other forms of basically mass-mediated contact. And so the evidence suggests that watching shows like Will and Grace or Queer Eye for the Straight Guy, shows that Modern Family, shows that have gay characters on them, it has a similar effect as actually getting to know a gay person. And that's basically because our brains, of course, evolved long before, you know, television and electronic media came along. So when we see a character on TV, our brain basically processes that the same way that you would process meeting that person in real life. And so I mentioned earlier, one of the sort of long-term slow trends is the number of people who know a gay person has steadily increased. Some of that may be through television and through film.
Interesting. Interesting. And certainly within the space of a very short few years, whereas when Will and Grace, maybe there was others, but to my memory, Will and Grace was really the first network show that portrayed a gay couple or a gay man. There was all sorts of controversy about it. And now a show is unusual if it doesn't have a gay in it. And nobody, hardly anybody, maybe other than Bill O'Reilly, says anything.
Yes, it really has been remarkably rapid change. And although you're correct, there were gay characters before Will and Grace, and let's not forget, of course, Ellen.
Oh, right, of course, right.
But, you know, frankly, her show was not as successful. And I don't think that was a function of prejudice. I think that was a function of writing. Will and Grace was a very funny show. And then other dramatic shows like 6 Feet Under had an important plot in several years dealing with gay characters. And so there's, as you say, it has now become commonplace. And that is truly a remarkable and quick, as history goes, quick change.
Yes, you bet. And
in the last decade.
And it'll be interesting to watch to see what effect, if any, that does have as this issue continues to go forward. Dr. Schapp, I want to thank you very much for taking time on a Friday night to be with us. Really appreciate it. And hope you have a great weekend.
Thank